When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company.
Like super woke.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR. Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, redballoon.work.
Hey everybody, Michael Thiessen here, and you are listening to Open Mic with me, Michael Thiessen, where we get to the heart of some ongoing cultural discussions. So this show is produced by Liberty Coalition Canada in partnership with ChristianWeek.org. Liberty Coalition Canada exists to establish Christ's righteousness and justice. We teach about what the Bible says about those concepts. And we defend those in Canada who stand. ChristianWeek.org exists to provide a hope-filled, balanced perspective on national and global issues. So head over to ChristianWeek.org, where our editor, Tim Tyso, curates some really great articles for you to be watching. We're so thankful for your listening to the show. And this show is also a ministry of Royal Spring Chapel. If you want to support us, head over to libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate, click the analysis box. And if you do that, the donation goes directly to Christian Week, which supports the podcasts. If you want to support the legal work and the advocacy work, head over to libertycoalitioncanada.com/donate and click other designations. That way we can support the ongoing cases, the filings that we're working on. So today, I have a special guest with me, Mr. Jonathan Wellum, and you will know about Jonathan because every time we do this show, I do an ad read for an organization called RockLink Investment Partners. And so as I say during almost every show, I want to introduce you to RockLink, but today we get to introduce you directly to Jonathan, who is the head of RockLink, and we are going to be talking about ESG goals, and we're going to be talking about the basics of economics. So everybody, if you're interested in what Jonathan has to teach us today, we unashamedly encourage you to go over and go to www.rocklink.com. That is link with a C, and you can email them at info@rocklink.com. Again, that's link with a C. So Jonathan, welcome to the show. And we love how you teach about economics, and we are thankful for your partnership. And that's why I'm excited to have you with me today.
Thank you very much, Michael. And I just want to say thank you for your support over the last sort of year and a half or two. I mean, in terms of clients, we've actually, I think, added maybe 50 or 60 different families to our book of business. And we love working with the clients. They're fantastic people and real freedom lovers. And they share the same values that we have. So we really appreciate that synergy between us. And we're big supporters of you and the whole Liberty Coalition network.
So I'm excited about our topics. Because there are two things that I always want to explore and never feel like I have enough information about. So let's start off with the conversation about a liberal government that will regularly talk about spending taxpayer money in order to invest in the economy. And just for our listeners' sake, folks, whenever I hear these types of ideas and these concepts, I have a mistrust of the Liberal government because I just don't trust what they say. And I have a basic understanding of math for my own local you know, if my bank account has some money in it, I can spend it. If it doesn't, I can't. Like, I've got some basic understanding of math. But Jonathan, when it comes to economics, it feels like this huge tree that I can't see all of the branches. And so I think the average person just says we have to leave economics to the experts. So when the liberals say we, the experts, are investing in the economy, I think the average person doesn't know whether that's truly a good thing or a bad thing. So I'd like you to unpack that for people right now.
Yeah, I think we need to start by what is the function of government in the first place? We live in a system now where the government has become almost 50% of the total value of the production of goods and services now in our country. A few years ago, it was a couple decades ago, it was about 20%. And so we've been, over the last number of years, government has gotten more and more involved in the economy, taxing more, taking more money out of the private sector, and then recycling it back into the economy in different ways. And so I think the first thing is to say government's really there to regulate a legal system to make sure that there's laws and those laws are obeyed and there's property rights and they control our borders. We should be controlling our borders. That's a very important part of government and in some, you know, defense, both in the country and outside in case there was external threats. Other than that, you know, the government should not be involved in a lot of other areas of the economy. And so we've gotten used to the government getting more and more involved, whether, you know, it's the education system, the healthcare system, running all of our infrastructure and so forth. And the problem with that is that you have to look at the efficiency of the different organizations. One of the most powerful mechanisms that's really been developed over the last 400 years, particularly in Western countries, countries with a Judeo-Christian base, has been the market-based economy, where you let individuals make the decisions in the economy. And so you have hundreds and thousands and millions of people making the buy and sell decisions, the demands decisions, the product decisions, the innovations, and so forth. What happens when government gets more involved in making those decisions, they first of all have to take the money from the private sector, which means they have to tax, which means they need more control, and they start to take more and more money out of the system. Second, it goes into a political regime which is largely biased, and so they are not there to be efficient and effective. They're there to push often their own agendas, and so the money gets put into areas that are not necessarily maximizing wealth. They're certainly not the most efficient. And that becomes a big problem because what happens is the money goes into, you know, looking after their friends, aligning pockets of people. A lot of times it's just basically money laundering into the private sector. They're not held accountable to profits. They're not held accountable to making high rates of return. And so over time, as governments take up more and more of the economy slows in growth. It becomes less profitable. Wealth levels go down, and people become much less prosperous as the government takes on more and more of the economy. In Canada, we're seeing this in spades. The government is involved in way too many parts of the economy. Wherever they're involved, it's inefficient, it's ineffective. The latest boondoggle in our own country here is this carbon tax, where we're supposed to be putting more and more taxes on carbon or fossil fuel, wherever that's gas and energy consumption. And they tell us that, don't worry, we're going to tax you, but then we'll give it back to you. So they're making investments supposedly in the future, but this is all a political agenda, an ideology of so-called climate change. So they take money from you through taxes, and then they write you checks back. Well, they're not giving you back as much as they take, but what makes it even worse is they're running it through an inefficient, ineffective bureaucracy, which is at least going to put the costs up 20-25%, so that, you know, who takes money and then supposedly gives it back to you and says that's efficient? So the problem with government is they're not held accountable. There's no incentive to run things efficiently and effectively. And the allocation of capital usually ends up in ideological investments and supports their friends. And that then will skew the wealth level. It will not produce the kind of wealth for the general population that should be produced. And the private sector should be making those decisions, which are then driven by the people in the population, not the government. government. I mean, just have to go to the post office to see how effective things are, and then go to private enterprise and see how effective they are. And so I think what people must understand is the government does not and should not be involved in almost, you know, in most areas of the economy. There's very limited things that the government should be involved in.
So on that point, you know, I think someone who is pro-government would say back to you, Jonathan, and certainly this is a feeling that I would hear, or a sentiment that I would hear regularly in the media or regularly just in the people, or in the citizenry, where people would be saying something like, okay, well, we need regulation because of corporate greed, and companies, corporations are greedy and they lobby for their own benefit, and the government is a servant of the people, and so they're not as greedy as corporations. And so can you try to explain that the myth of greed and account and the concept of accountability in the free market? Because obviously greed is a sin, obviously greed is an issue, but it seems that a free market has the opportunity to hold greed to an account. But again, like we've got Jagmeet Singh literally getting up recently within the last 3 months trying to force grocery stores to do price fixing or to change things around because what he would call, you know, outrageous profits in a time when inflation has gone up. And so it's a perfect example of the government pointing to the private sector and saying, well, you're a bunch of greed mongers, so we have to take the money from you in order to distribute it properly. Can you try to dispel that or walk us through it?
Yeah, and I mean, Jagmeet Singh is just a completely incompetent individual. He doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. So if you just take that one example, and we'll back up after this, but you take the example of the food distributors. First of all, the profit margins are low single digit profit margins in these entities. So yeah, they're making large profits, but how much money have they invested? It's your return on invested capital that you need to look at. So if you have a company that makes $3 billion, that sounds like a lot of money, but if they've got $50 billion invested all across the country in real estate and in production capabilities, retail stores, establishments, and so forth, then that $3 billion actually is not a lot of money. And so they just throw out these large numbers, but they're not contextualized to the kind of investments that these companies have had to put out. And when you look at our food retail distribution in Canada, again, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it is very, very efficient, incredibly efficient. The government could never run anything like Loblaws or Zobeys and the different food distributors that we have. And it's just the height of arrogance and stupidity on the part of these individuals to get up and virtue signal like that. But to back up just from that, I mean, just using that as an example, the problem is that the government is not efficient. It's not effective. They say it can't be greedy. The government can be an exceptionally greedy. In fact, I would argue the government is the place that we need to really protect ourselves from the most, because you have the concentration of power and you have a lack of accountability. In the markets, you have accountability. And what's most important for us, especially if we want to have an efficient market, is to keep the competition as high as possible. We should make sure that governments are not buying off, or I should say businesses are not buying off government and getting laws made that protect monopolies or quasi-monopolies. What we want is as much free market competition. And if you're competing, that's going to keep people much more ethical, because you're not going to go to a business that isn't treating you well. You're not going to go to a business that's creating a product that's faulty. You're going to go to the competitor. And one of the most powerful ways to have a more honest and less greedy environment is competition and a market and lack of concentration of power. As soon as you concentrate power, whether it's in the corporate sector, and we need to be careful that it doesn't get too concentrated, or in the government, you will have abuse. And so we would argue very strongly the best is lots of competition, lots of new entrants, lots of entrepreneurship, keeping regulations low so that new people can enter into businesses, not tying up companies. And what's happening now is everything's becoming so complicated that you have to have a whole whole range of lawyers and accountants, and you have to be a very large company to survive the regulatory regimes. And what we should be doing is cutting regulations, making it easier for capital to go into new industries, making it more competitive, and we would see wealth take off, and we would have better production of products and services, and a lot less greed in the marketplace. But I'd argue, ultimately, the most greedy entity of all is the government. And the government has proven this time and time again. Not only are they greedy, but they're the most inefficient and ineffective at delivering products and services. We're seeing that now in Ontario, just in our healthcare system. Our healthcare system is atrocious. And it's not because we have bad doctors or nurses. It's the bureaucracy. It's the red tape. It's all of the layers that we've placed upon the hospitals that are burdening the whole system down. Same thing in our education system. If you look at private education versus government education, and especially Christians know this because, you know, most of us send our kids to Christian schools or homeschool. The inefficient, ineffective nature of our education system and the bureaucracy, the municipal level, the provincial level rules, regulations, all of that leads to a massive misallocation of capital, not to mention the content which they're teaching becomes skewed to the agenda and the belief of the institution, the government in this case, so you get a whole ideological propagandization. But that's bad enough, but how it's delivered is incredibly expensive. And there's never enough money in this system when the government's running something. They always need more. They always need more, and they're always running out of money. It doesn't matter how much you give them. And so I think people really need to realize the best way to run things is market economy, lots of competition, hold people accountable, and it just will take off. I mean, the entrepreneurship of people is phenomenal, and the resources that God's given us in the world are outstanding. And let people... give them freedom. Give them freedom to act, freedom to get out into the market and service their neighbor and look after their neighbor and create products that their neighbors want, and so forth.
So number one, I wasn't going to go there, but you went to healthcare, and I have to say one of the most significant differences of living in the United States, other than the positive laws that are being made in the state of Kentucky, is that healthcare competes. And so if you don't like the price that one hospital's giving you, you go to another hospital, and they know that. And so the best way that I can describe it, it is, it's like a mechanic shop. Hey, I've got three quotes, and I'm going with this one. And it increases customer service, it increases price competition, and it totally changes the way that you approach healthcare and the way that you deal with cost. And so and then education, of course, this is why even recently this is why the unions battle so hard for government funding of schools, because they always get to get paid as long as the government is behind them, and there's they're actually holding competition away. And so that makes a lot of sense. But Jonathan, it seems like we're talking about the basics and maybe we're returning to the basics, but is there some type of economic theory out there that makes sense to these people that is a compelling narrative or is it just simply we've gotten used to a growing government? Like, are there different approaches to economics where someone would say to you, well, no, Jonathan, actually you're missing the global picture, or you're missing all of these, equations and charts. You know what I'm getting at? Where economics seems to be so complex at the higher levels and so simple in my own household.
Interesting enough, Michael, it really is quite simple, and it's quite profound that we make the same mistake generationally over and over again by allowing government to get quite large and to take more of the private sector. It's phenomenal that we would be this foolish. There's no evidence anywhere that a large presence of the government in an economy adds value over time, and eventually it will squander the resources and destroy the wealth and prosperity of the civilization. And that's what happens every time. It's interesting to see the new leader in Argentina. I mean, he came in, and that country was one of the wealthiest in South America. It was run into the ground over the last quite a few decades. And he comes in, and within 2 or 3 months, he's balancing the budget. He's slashing the size of government, and capital's coming in. People are now going to invest. And it's shocking how fast he has changed things. And we all know this, and yet we somehow think that we can get something free from the government. And what we don't seem to realize is the government lives off the private sector. If you don't have a strong private sector, the government can give you nothing. And eventually it will reduce you to complete poverty.
Yeah, I want you to connect the dots there between investment and companies walking away, because you're right there. Like the carbon tax. The carbon tax is basically taxing every sector, all the way down to the individual household. It's just a category of taxation that goes all the way down. So of course it's going to increase costs. So can you explain to people what you mean by that? So in Venezuela, all of a sudden the government is reduced and marginalized. And you just said the capital is coming in. So can you explain how, when government gets too involved, how it, like, they might say we're pumping money into the economy, but in the very real world, there's a lot of people saying, I'm actually not going to put my money in that economy.
Yeah. And I mentioned that's Argentina.
Yes. What did I say? Venezuela? Sorry, Argentina.
Yeah. But Venezuela is another just terrible, terrible case of a wealthy, right, wealthy, prosperous country that God has enriched with such bountiful resources being run into the ground by socialists who benefit themselves. But in terms of, yeah, capital, it's interesting. I was just reading an article yesterday, and the Bank of Montreal had said that in 2023, Canada had a net outflow of $43 billion of investments money. $43 billion. Okay, what's that mean? Well, in previous years, we averaged, over the last 10 years, we've been averaging an inflow of $12 billion per year. So you go from an average of $12 billion to an outflow of $43 billion. Now, what does that mean? It means that capital is fleeing the country because they don't trust Trudeau. They don't trust the policies. It's too hard to invest in the ground, the resources, the wealth that Canada has. And so they say, we're going to go somewhere else. They had the scare of the Emergency Act, the freezing of accounts. It was concerned with, you know, the way the government's been running things. Christy Freeland, as a finance minister, is not competent at all. And so when you have that money leave, that money is leaving and pulling out capital. Capital is what we need for long-term investments. When you invest in capital, plant, machinery, equipment, and so forth, that's what's going to have, you know, the hiring of jobs, the multiplying of wealth, the taking advantage of resources that are in the ground, taking them out, being able to sell them into the international markets and so forth. And so when you have governments become overbearing, money will go where it can make a return. If it can't make the return in Canada or another country, it leaves. It goes where it's going to be respected. And as that money leaves, then it's being pulled out of the private sector. The government cannot make up for that. The government can only start to tax a private sector that's becoming smaller and weaker, which means it puts more stress on the private sector. And what it ends up doing in many cases is getting into bad monetary policies, which means it, you know, tries to lower interest rates to sort of cheat a little bit, so it's not giving you the return on your money that you should be getting. And then it starts printing money. It starts going to the central banks and saying, we'll just print money. We'll devalue our currency and try to fool people that they're getting more money. But if you're not producing more goods and services, then all you're going to create is inflation, and your wealth levels are going to be dropping, which is what we're seeing in Canada. The average GDP per capita has been dropping the last number of years. We're back to 2015 levels. And that's what people are feeling, a drop in the standard of living. Government's too big. It's taking too many of the resources. It's driving the private sector out. It's overtaxing the private sector. And as you pointed out, that carbon tax, whenever energy costs go up, that goes into every single industry. It filters through the whole economy, because the whole economy, again, only functions if it has, it needs energy. And energy is critical grease, if you were, for the machinery of the economy. And the cost of energy will be borne and pushed through the whole economy. And that's what we've seen. I'm going to continue to see. If the carbon tax goes up in April, it'd be devastating to Canada.
Okay, so I know I'm being difficult. So now I'm being a hostile witness. But when you say Chrystia Freeland is not competent, I don't think I can take a picture of a person who comes across more confident, travels the world, goes to the World Economic Forum, is in Ukraine, teaching us about all the things that are needed. Like, I'm being very sincere here, Jonathan, where it's like, it's simple math. Like, if you punish a company, the company will leave. Like, you know very, very well that I am actually one of those individuals that left the Canadian market with any type of money that a pastor would have. And it's because we were punished there. How is it that someone like Chrystia Freeland could even pretend, like, why don't they want what we want? Like, and I know that's okay, so if I were there, I'd want my cut. If I was if I'm in government, I want my cut. Like, I get it. I want to pad some of my friends. I want to launder a little bit. But at the end of the day, I can't get in front of the whole nation time and time again and pretend like I am a brilliant mathematician and economist. Is this bold-faced lying? Like, I, you know what I'm trying to get at? Like, it's so hard to believe that people would be so vile constantly. Now, again, we're going to get into ESG. We're going to get into ideology soon. So I know that is a major factor. Evil is a major factor. But at the end of the day, how can it be so simple and Canadians vote Chrystia Freeland in and she just pretends like she knows everything about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good question. I've often said I'd rather trust my mother, who had no education in economics, was trained as a nurse. I'd rather have her as the governor of the Bank of Canada than some of the ones running the institutions, because there's a basic common sense. I mean, and it gets back to one of the things that we were talking about early on, and even before we jumped on the air here, Christians are often intimidated by, you know, the economics, these PhDs, these professionals, and so forth. But we should not. If you have the basic understanding of the world, the Christian worldview that we have from the Bible, then you can really go into almost any of these sectors and understand the basics of what's going on. You almost have to be educated into a certain degree of imbecility. And just foolishness to not see what is obvious. And so I think that there's a couple of things going on. I think that they are just educated by and completely dominated by false ideology, and there's a certain darkness over them, because there's no historical evidence ever that supports what the initiatives that they're promoting. I mean, none. Economically, we are going down a road that will lead to increasingly totalitarianism and less wealth creation and increased poverty. And we see it all around us. And so, but these folks will stand up and suggest that they know everything, that they're geniuses, and that you don't have a clue what you're talking about. I think we have to have the tenacity, and we have to have the confidence to go to God's word, go to the basic principles that we have, that we understand, the proper role of government that God's laid out very clearly for us, and the proper role that each of us have. And hold these people accountable and throw them out of office in the next election, and try to get people in that will be respectful of a Christian worldview and the proper laws and understanding of economics. But to me, economics 101 is very simple. It is not complicated, and yet we have these high priests of finance and economics telling us that it is complicated. Somehow you'll never understand it. Just trust us, and we cannot trust them. I mean, we saw the same thing, as you know, with COVID and the jabs and so forth, and the whole drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, again, is another thoroughly corrupt industry. And they'll promote anything for a bottom line. And they're in cahoots with, in close relationship with the government so they can get away with it. And so we must be skeptical. We must ask questions, and we must be confident in our overall worldview and not be thrown off by these so-called experts and high priests that occupy all of these so-called esteemed positions in the different sectors of our economy.
Okay, so one of the states that I think is doing a good job right now in trying to fight foolish ideology driving economics, and I listened to Ted Cruz lately, but if you just go on Twitter and you type in BlackRock ESG, you get stories like Texas has just pulled $8.5 billion of investment out of BlackRock over what's called an ESG insanity. So everybody, I know that you're shocked that I asked Jonathan how a liberal government that denies the reality of maleness and femaleness could get up and just lie to you. I get it. I just wanted to be honest about how it's just exhausting to watch people bold-faced lie. And sometimes if you just watch it long enough, you go, it's not possible for them to keep doing it. But here we are, and now we're going to unpack why these things happen. And they happen because of a worldview or an ideology that is driving a policy. So, Jonathan, can you please explain two things? Who is BlackRock? Because again, like words like the World Economic Forum and BlackRock, I know it sounds silly, but to the average listener, those are things that people just say, oh, that's just the boogeyman. You're on another train of misinformation here. So please explain to us who BlackRock is, and then explain what their ESG goals are, and explain to us what that is.
Yeah. I mean, it is no conspiracy theory to say that there's a global cabal of individuals who are pushing a very much a global agenda, if you will. What's that global agenda? I think it's more and more control for a limited number of people and subjugation of the population. That comes in various forms. And so over the last number of years, we've gone from this whole idea in the investment industry of promoting what they used to call ethical funds to sustainable development funds. And then more recently, this has transitioned into ESG, which stands for environmental, social, and governance. I like to joke and say it stands for extortion, shakedown, and grift. But ESG is the buzzword. So what's happened is, so you listen to that and you go, E stands for environmental. You go, wow, okay, we're concerned about the environment. We're Christians. We want to be good stewards of the environment. You listen to, you know, the issue about social, and we're concerned about, you know, the social environment that we're in, social factors and so forth. And the same thing with governance. Aren't we concerned about proper governance? Well, what's happened is that the current sort of neo-pagan world that we live in, it's the one that's put the content and the substance into each of these three terms. And so environmental now has really become, you know, decarbonization, getting rid of all fossil fuels, pushing sort of this whole climate change agenda and substituting it with so-called renewable resources, solar energy, windmills, and so forth. Social has okay, become-
before you move on, Jonathan, am I wrong in thinking that hydroelectric dams are renewable energy?
No, hydroelectric is deemed a renewable energy, and we in Canada have substantial resources already in renewable, which is hydroelectric, because you just put turbines in the water and the Lord sends the waters to the earth and the rivers move and the energy just continues flowing, right?
Yeah. But is it not also very hard to continue to develop hydroelectric in Canada because of the there's policies within government that are demoting or prohibiting the development of new dams for the protection of the environment? So I'm just pointing that out, everybody, that in Canada, we actually have
endless
resources in renewable energy if we just dammed up a few more things. And and generated electricity that way. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, there's tremendous inconsistencies within the whole environmental area. Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, it's just a real quagmire once you get into it. But I mean, the big thing is, how do you get off fossil fuels and this net neutrality and this whole agenda? But yeah, within that, you could say, well, why aren't we using more nuclear, which is coming on a little bit more because that wouldn't use any of the carbon. Are we actually accounting for all the mining that we have to do in order to have copper and nickel and lithium and so forth? I mean, you can't do batteries unless you do a lot of mining. And there's a tremendous amount of hypocrisy. They don't count certain things in the equations and they ignore others. And so this is the problem. It becomes really a huge agenda, and it's all based upon, I shouldn't say it's all based, but there's a lot of lies throughout it and a lot of contradictions. You know, for example, one of the most important metals we're going to need is copper if you're going to electrify everything. You're going to have electric cars and the utility grids are going to have to be built up to support all the demand and so forth. And yet, you know, developing copper mines is really tricky. We've got all these environmentalists trying to stop the development of copper mines. Well, if you don't have copper, we're not going to electrify. And so you can't have it both ways. And so it's really a really crazy kind of environmentalism that's emerged here. And largely propagated on lies. So that's one of it, the ESG. And one of the reasons why Texas is so upset with this is that they are an energy state and they've got tremendous oil and gas resources and they're very responsible with these resources. And so they're saying, well, why should our pension monies, why should the money of Texans, which is being taken and put into pension dollars, go towards supporting BlackRock and some of these other companies who are saying, we don't want any carbon exposure and no fossil fuels. So in other words, we're giving them money to take out of Texas and not invest back into Texas. And so they're saying, well, what's that all about? That's crazy. We're actually hurting ourselves. We're saving money. We're putting and giving it to people who are actually hurting Texas. So that's the environmental side. The social side has really become a whole issue of are companies supporting abortion? Are they allowing their employees to go out and get abortions? Are they supporting critical race theory within their companies? And we all know many and transgender, all of that. So this isn't about social factors that Christians would be concerned about. This is pushing a very very evil and wicked agenda in terms of sexual mores and turning upside down, the created order, which God has made in terms of male and female and family relationships and so forth. And then when it gets into governance has always been the fiduciary responsibility of companies to act for their shareholders primarily, the ones that are the investors in a company. So now they've introduced this new term called stakeholder capitalism. And you go, oh, that sounds great. What does that mean? Well, it means companies not only worried about their shareholders, they're supposed to worry about every single other element out there in the economy. And you can broaden it so much so that if they're not concerned about the social agenda, they're not concerned about the environmental agenda, they're not concerned about this woke theory and that woke theory. That's all part of these corporations. They're supposed to be integrating all of this into their business, not just profits and efficiency of capital and creating the best products and services. Now it's all these other things that they're supposed to be worried about. Well, that's just craziness. It gets away from the fiduciary responsibility of owners of the capital in the first place. But what it does is it turns corporations into doing crazy things like we saw with, Bud Light, we saw with Disney, we've seen with other corporations where all of a sudden they're promoting their brand with transgender actors or actresses and so forth. And they're actually undermining their brand, but that gets into this whole issue of stakeholder capitalism instead of shareholder capitalism. And so what's happened is this ESG movement has become really an ideological left-wing woke movement, not 100%, but largely. And so what we've seen also, so you take that and then you look at the concentration of wealth that's taken place in the capital markets last 20 years. More and more people are investing in what they call passive investments. So the index funds. So instead of buying individual stocks, you just buy the index or you buy ETFs, exchange traded funds, so certain baskets of securities. And so there is no real specialization of buying individual stocks anymore and creating unique portfolios and then voting those stocks in the proxies based upon what is in the best interest of those companies. You now have this whole business that's grown, which is really a commodity. It's a commodity business. In other words, if you're just going to have an index fund, it's just a technology. It's not really investing anymore. It's just a technology. And so what's happened is BlackRock, Fidelity, Vanguard, there's a number of these companies have created the systems in order to manage these index funds and these exchange traded funds. And they manage them for 0.2% or 20 basis points, really cheap. And so they've now become dominant. So as investors put their money in the market, they go where they can find the cheapest price because you're not differentiating more. You're just buying the index. So why you're just going to pay the lowest price. You're not going to pay someone a higher price to just buy the index. And so BlackRock and Vanguard, Fidelity, there's a handful of these guys dominate. They now basically control large portions of the equity markets through their funds. And so retail investors have given their autonomy, their decision-making power over their shares into the hands of these big companies. And so BlackRock now has like $10 trillion that it manages. Vanguard's got another, I don't know how many trillion at Fidelity. And so what's happening is 30% approximately, a large number of the shares on the S&P 500, the big US index, are controlled by just three or four companies. And so what that means is then BlackRock, which is run by Larry Fink, who has a very, left-wing woke ideology, and, he's part of the World Economic Forum, he says, I'm going to use our voting power, which has been given to me by retail investors in our funds, I'm going to push these agendas on the corporations. And so this is what we're seeing. We're seeing these left-wing agenda pushed on the corporations. And if they don't, if they don't follow suit, then they'll be voted against or they'll put new directors on the company. Exxon, there was a high-profile case a little while ago where they changed the directors on Exxon. These new directors said, hey, Exxon's got to get into renewable energy and get out of fossil fuels. And it was disastrous. Exxon started to lose, didn't make as much money. And then they've now reversed that policy. But the point is, fewer and fewer companies, BlackRock being one of the largest, control the voting rights and the proxies and the ownership of more and more of the companies, the publicly traded companies. And it's what's interesting is we, the retail investors, have given them our money. And it's all our money that they're using against us to push a left-wing woke agenda and something which is completely against a Christian worldview. Maybe completely is too strong a word, but substantially against a Christian worldview.
Okay, please explain three terms to me.
Sure.
So when you're talking about buying indexes, that sounded like mutual funds to me, in the sense of like you buy into a big fund and that fund is managed by a company. Okay, and then talk again about this voting. So these companies, in order to manage these indexes or funds, have gone out and purchased enough shares that they have voting rights in these companies. Am I understanding that situation as you explained it?
Yeah. Every time you buy a stock, you have a voting right because you become the owner of a company. I mean, the stock market and the capital markets are a beautiful thing in terms of efficiency. So if you buy a share of General Motors, for example, you go and buy one share, you then have the right to have one vote. If you buy 1,000 shares of GM, you have 1,000 votes. If you own 30% of the company, then you get 30% of the votes. And so what happens though is if you buy it individually in your own, your own TD account or your bank account, and you control, then that proxy goes to you. You make that decision. When you buy an index fund, you're outsourcing that decision to the company that runs the index fund.
Okay, and just pause there. And the difference between an index fund manager and something that you guys would do at RockLink is that on one hand, I'm outsourcing the management with you guys, but I'm still the one who is retaining the vote. Or how does that work? Because I know what what you're saying is I'm asking someone to manage this for me, and in managing it for me, they are then taking the control of it, not me.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So if it was with RockLink, we will make those decisions, but we hopefully will make those decisions consistent with your fundamental beliefs. So you know where we stand, or our investors know where we stand on issues. We will not be supporting questions. We won't be supporting initiatives on the proxy voting system that would go against our principles. We'll see what happens with what BlackRock, I mean, and Larry Fink, I mean, he's in the press, you can call these up, you can Google articles. They have explicitly stated that they want to push certain agendas on corporations. I mean, that's what they want to do. There was an article, I think back in, well, it just came out recently, I was just looking at before we started here, and it was a video just the exact words he said, Larry Fink was, he said that he wanted to force diversity inclusion policies in companies. So they have agendas and they're aggressive and they have such powerful blocks of voting that corporations have to listen to them, or, you know, they'll toss the directors and they can make decisions at the executive level.
Okay, so let's go back and let's play the contrarian. Let's play the person who's going to argue with you, and they would say, well, wouldn't Christians do the same thing? If RockLink was to get as big as BlackRock and have that many voting rights, wouldn't we Christians make sure that we are pushing honesty and the distinction of sexes into companies?
Absolutely, we would. And we would argue very strongly that would be consistent with God's created order and what is right and what's just. And we're going to use the standards of God's word and God's revelation as our guidepost. So again, if you're going to have maximum freedom, it still has to be freedom with a form. And that form, ultimately, we would argue, would be a biblical worldview, which would maximize our freedom, our prosperity, and the vitality of our overall economy. And that would be by following God's laws, not rejecting them and turning them on their head, which will do the exact opposite. Yeah.
So I think the reason I bring that up is, again, for our listeners to understand, like, there is no neutrality. You either manage your own funds and you vote according to your own values. And of course, we would encourage you to manage and vote in accordance with a Christian worldview. But if you're giving it to a third party for the sake of – what would be the argument, Jonathan? The argument with giving it to a big company would be cheap management fees and would be a diversified portfolio so that it stems the ups and downs of the market, correct?
Exactly. It's just efficiency. I mean, they get so large, they're basically just a big software company running your money. And if they can do it at 20 basis points, really low cost, then that's going to maximize your return and efficiency. So you say, well, I'll just go with them. And that's why they've been able to become so large.
And Christians, we've been saying forever, you need to know where you're putting your money. And people have said, well, how could I know? Like, I can't look into every company. I can't look into these things. And yet here we are just 15 years later. And I say those things because they were said to me as a young man, where should we put our small mutual fund investments? Where should we put them? And the average answer was, well, you can't know. You've just got to throw it into the best place to get the best return. And now I'm 47 years old. So maybe it's not just 15 years. Maybe it's 22 years later, 25 years later. And these companies are coming out full disclosure saying, hey, we are managing your money and we're managing your money to push this very particular ideology onto the world. So Jonathan, as we wrap things up, I want to get to a point that I actually don't know what your answer will be at all. Up until now, I probably could have guessed, you know, where you would teach us and lead us. But here's the thing, okay? So I see this in politics all the time. I see this in economics all the time, where people will say, well, look, like, it, the ship's going to right. Like, look at Texas as an example. Texas is finally pulling out. These people just can't keep doing this forever. The ship's going to right. You know, we always get this way. You know, Trudeau's not going to get voted in again. Like, Poilievre's going to win on a landslide. And I just fundamentally always disagree. I'm like, no, you're just assuming that the solution's going to come without hard work. You're just assuming that in Texas, that wasn't involved with a lot of, you know, very serious people doing serious thinking in order to motivate people to choose different policies and pull out of BlackRock. So when people, do you think that economically the ship's just going to right itself? Like, we're BlackRock's one day going to wake up and say, okay, well, Texas left and so-and-so left. Okay, so we got to change this around. Or does Larry Fink drive BlackRock into the ground with all of your money included because he has a social agenda? Like, what did you know what I'm trying to get at here, where people just seem to go, oh, don't worry about it? I think the one thing people should do, and folks, this is why we promote RockLink, is you should be pulling out of your, you should be pulling your money away from companies that are managing your money against you and your values. But do you think that the market's going to check, or is there enough government intervention right now to prevent that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that, I mean, there's some checks coming in, because ultimately the ESG agenda, as it's now being promoted, goes against created reality. And therefore, it's going to lead to problems. I mean, hiring people that are substandard, increasing inflation because we're not going after the proper energy. You know, it's distorting the market, which has costs. And so that's what we're seeing with Texas and some of these other people pushing back. They're saying, look, we got pension funds. We have obligations. If we're not making maximum returns and we're not looking after our people, then we're not going to be able to make our pension obligations. And this is a serious issue when you've got unfunded liabilities already. You know, you've got pension obligations that aren't even funded properly as it is. You don't need more problems. And so there is, you see, that in a normal market mechanism, there would be a lot of corrective actions. I would argue, though, that in the case of Larry Fink, there has been money coming out of ESG funds the last couple quarters. And it's interesting. But what all he's done, and he's said this publicly, is he doesn't use the word ESG anymore. He just sort of changed his vocabulary. He hasn't changed his agenda, though. He hasn't changed his ideas. He hasn't changed what his ultimate objectives and goals are. And so I think to really write this, it is really a spiritual battle. And I think we must look to the Lord. We must ultimately repent and turn from our ways in the past. And we need to look to God. We need conversion. We need people to see a proper Christian worldview, to bow to God as creator, as Lord, and see the problem with the concentration of power in the hands of whether it's companies or government, and break this up and go back to a much, much more freedom and market-oriented economy. But we need a change in hearts. We need a change in hearts. There's just too many people, again, that are blinded by the things of this world and are not prepared to make the changes or the sacrifices. And we need the illumination of the Holy Spirit. We need a great awakening, if you will, or a revival across our country if we're really going to substantially change these things. Otherwise, it's so embedded and people are blind and they're not overly concerned about it. And you know, we continue to see the erosion of wealth. And I mean, there's some upset in Canada. I think we'll probably see a change in government. But again, that new government, will they make the kind of changes that we need to see if they're not Christians, they're not committed to a Christian worldview? I mean, they'll make some good decisions, but it won't be the kind of things that we'll really be looking to really substantially change this whole situation around. So I think it's, you know, it's a spiritual battle. We need to win that one. We need our churches to stand up. We need people to understand the Christian worldview. And then we need to be active and out there in every area of life, bringing, you know, the Lordship of Christ into every sphere of activity, especially now as we're talking about the area of economics and finance and the distribution of capital.
Folks, in some of these respects, the solution is simple. Put your money where your mouth is and literally go move your money from organizations that Jonathan has mentioned to an organization like RockLink. And Jonathan, I'm very thankful for the way that you've lectured and talked in different contexts to teach Christians about that. And we fully encourage people to move your money over to RockLink. The other thing is just move your, if you're at a church where the preaching does not teach anything about economics, and the engagement of stewardship in a real sense, not just not in a very generic a generic sense that lacks application. You've got to get up and move. There are ways where we can, in small ways, get involved. And so in all of these ways, one thing I want to say to you is that you can get involved. You can change your own spending habits. You can buy a good Christian economics book, understand economics 101 for yourself. And in all of these areas, we do not need – be careful of what purchases you make. Very, very few of my dollars ever goes to Starbucks. And I say very, very few simply because we've been on an almost full boycott for 5 years. And every once in a while you drive through a town and the only place open or available is a Starbucks. So in that moment, Starbucks gets our money, but in a general sense, Target has been another thing where many people in our church have boycotted Target. We do want to communicate to individuals that we Christians, when we get together and work together, we have the ability to consolidate wealth and utilize it, and at the same time to withhold it from the organizations that are just working against us. And so, Jonathan, this has been a really good lesson for us. On that last note, you might have some concluding thoughts, but we'll just go completely tangentially. I'll ask two random questions. Number one, is it biblical to bet? Because I want to make a bet that the liberals win again. And all of my friends who are hopeful like you are, I want to make a wager, because I just think that this is the media lull of the conservatives, that everything's going to be fine. And then I think he's sailing back in with a good, what is it called? The support and confidence of the NDP. And I think that between the two of them, they're going to do just fine. So is it biblical to bet? Yes or no?
Well, if you're not putting any money on it, it's just a competitive way of trying to predict the future. I'll go along with that, but I'll take that. I'll take the other side of that one. I do think that Justin Trudeau has alienated just about everybody in the country, and Singh is likewise. And I do think that that does give the opportunity for Pierre Poilievre to go up to center and take
it. I sure wish it was Maxime Bernier or the Christian Heritage Party. I have to say, I sure wish it was PPC or the CHP rather than the big tent conservatives. Okay, that's fine. That was a random thing. And a cup of coffee, a cup of resistance coffee. Exactly. In the background. So our friends over at Resistance Coffee are back. And we're excited that they're back under new ownership. And that's not an ad read, folks. That's just Jonathan being supportive of a good Christian company, and me as well. Okay, so then last question, random question that came up to my mind. What do you think about Disney in the sense of has there been enough of a shock in Disney losses that company is going to slow back and realize that the attack on the family is not good for business?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think that they are sold. They're so down the river, so to speak, in terms of their ideology, that they might around the edges be a little bit less offensive. But to be, as you know, if you go back and look at Disney the last 20 years, I mean, most of what they produced isn't worth watching anyway. And why would we never had our children watching much of Disney, and that would go back, 20, 25 years. It's always been at best, a mediocre type of content, at worst, again, anti-Christian. But I think Iger and so forth, they're sold out. And so they might make changes around the edges, but I think Christians should know better than to support Disney. Their all of their different theme parks and so forth. Can't we come up with better places to go to? Go see the art. Go see something with substance. Go in the mountains and go hiking and you know, look at God's creation. Don't waste yourself, waste your time down in Orlando, for goodness sakes, and fund that institution. I mean, we should know better than that. We should, there's plenty of places we can go in the United States or Canada that are far more uplifting than Disney World or Disneyland. And but I don't think they are changed. I think, again, this goes back to what I said before. I think we need a massive working of God's Spirit through our culture. We need a change of heart from top to bottom if we're really going to see a substantial change in direction of our societies and cultures.
And that is a very fair and good answer. I think maybe the context or where I was coming from, anecdotally or beyond anecdotally, is Disney losing money comparatively to what they could be making? Like I think it's just one of those stories where people are hoping that, you know, we've boycotted, we've pulled Disney Plus, you know, whatever. Is Disney suffering? I was maybe more from the economic side. I was asking that question.
Yeah, I mean, the stock went down quite a bit, but actually earnings and profitability have been relatively stable. The same thing with Target has bounced back too. Now, that doesn't mean we should support them. We should keep the pressure on, just like we saw with Planet Fitness just recently, where they were allowing men in the women's washrooms, and all of a sudden people said, no, we're not going to go to Planet Fitness, and the stock dropped. So we should keep the pressure on, but overall, I think the majority of people in Canada or the United States just don't follow through because they're not believers, and they're very confused. Their hearts need to be changed, and so it's discouraging at one level. But that's the importance of the church. It's the importance of Christians to stand up for what's right, and to pray that God makes a huge change in our society and culture. Yeah.
Well, and on that note, everybody, Jonathan and myself are both big supporters and friends of the Ezra Institute. And so when we are talking about a change of heart, the Ezra Institute often talks about a transformation of your worldview and your mind. At the Ezra Institute, we want to help stimulate your critical thinking. We want to encourage you. If we have in-person training sessions with like-minded peers, young adults who are turning around and have sat under a lecture with Jonathan about economics and know how to plow through for the future and not be deceived by just a polished system out there. And so if you're curious about the Ezra Institute programs, we'd love for you to go over to the EzraInstitute.com. So just EzraInstitute.com. And if you type in, just click on the training programs, you can see all of the different programs that are going on in Canada and in the United States. And of course, you've heard Jonathan talk specifically about the Lordship of Christ into all things. And this is one of the concepts that we teach regularly at the Ezra Institute. So we would love you to go and sign up. Parents, we want you to join the Cultural Leadership Academy. You know, for too long, parents have been maybe sending their young adults to worldview training situations, but we want the whole family to come and participate. So EzraInstitute.com. Jonathan, thanks so much for being on the show with us. We are just so excited to learn from you today. I know that the listeners will really appreciate this. Everybody, thanks for listening. Share this video and share this audio wherever you get or listen to the podcast. We want to see this go as far and wide as possible. Just so you know, we're getting about an average of 5,000 to 6,000 listens per episode now, and we want to continue to grow that so that people learn how to think through these issues. So thanks for listening. Godspeed.